The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Our next guest is a business consultant who's written a book with the fascinating title of Trust Rules: How the World's Best Managers Create Great Places to Work. Bob Lee, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM. Do managers all really care about creating great places to work?
I think managers care about results. They care about business performance. So a great place to work is really a way to achieve great business performance.
But do they see it like that?
No, they don't necessarily. I think often when, if you ask people what they think about when they think of a great place to work, they'll think of at-desk massage and all sorts of wonderful facilities and free food and gym memberships and so on.
Is that what they really think?
I think so, yeah. Like, I mean, you know, typically if you ask people what is a great place to work, the first thing they'll say is, well, this place isn't. Or they'll name somewhere like Google or Facebook or somewhere like that. Or they'll talk about somewhere that has all of these facilities. The sort of a big secret really is that what distinguishes great workplaces is the culture. It's the way that people get on with each other.
Yeah, because I would have thought that for a lot of people, the great place to work is somewhere where they can do their very best, where they get a sense of fulfillment because they're doing their best for their job, for their colleagues, for the company, for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, a lot of companies talk about our people are the best, but obviously everybody can't have the best people because nobody ever boasts about having the worst people. So what these companies are good at, I think, is bringing out the best in people. So allowing good people to perform to the best of their ability. And we all do that when we're relaxed, when we're comfortable, when we feel trusted.
But yet, I'd imagine many people listening will associate places to work with command and control, that management imposes and the workers are expected to follow, even if they know that the managers are wrong.
Yeah, I think that's probably fading because so much work now is brain work rather than hand work. And you can supervise how somebody uses their hands and you can supervise their output, but you can't really count creative content or you can't count how people interact with customers at the end of a phone. So I think there's a growing awareness that it's about relationships, and employees, particularly in a softer employment market like we have now, employees have a lot more choice. Their expectations are shaped by stories of what happens in the best. And I think that that's really the move that we're seeing now.
So what do you do if you're in a position, I take it, as an employee or a worker, where you're told what to do, you can argue strongly that what you've been told to do is the wrong thing, and yet it remains imposed upon you?
What can you do? Well, I presume the starting point is you can think about moving.
That's not necessarily always available
to
everyone.
No, it's not. Absolutely not. I think it's difficult. Like, I mean, it's always difficult to influence upwards, and particularly if you're trying to influence somebody that doesn't want to be influenced. And by definition, what you're really saying is you're in a situation where it's somebody who's telling you what to do. So it is difficult. I don't know how you would get around that because, you know, somebody who believes that the best way to get the best out of people is through command and control is going to be very slow to come to the idea that you can actually get more by setting people up to be successful and then getting out of the way. It's a different mindset.
But isn't there also a case that many managers feel they've worked their way to positions that they know better by virtue of experience or by education or by ownership or whatever, so they feel almost an entitlement to tell others what to do rather than drawing the best out of people?
I think there are some managers like that, but I do think that it's probably overstated. I think there's a growing number of businesses that recognize the value of people. I'll tell you, the main reason that they do is because people are much more demanding now when they interview. There isn't the same expectation that you have 20 applicants and you simply select the one that you want. It's as much a case of courting the employee as it is the employee courting the organization. I think that shapes behavior as well.
So does that mean a manager has to have a degree of what's called emotional intelligence?
Yeah, absolutely. But just as normal intelligence varies, so too does emotional intelligence. I think there's this misconception that managers have to manage in a particular way. They don't really. I think what most of us want is we want a manager who is a decent human being and who treats us as a decent human being. So one of the things you'll often hear is that maybe an introverted person who's highly intelligent, very successful, but they're introverted, and they'll say, I'm not very good with people, it's not really my forte. Well, in reality, if it's not really your thing and it's not really your forte, then you're in the wrong job. You know, you shouldn't be supervising people or managing people if you don't have the capability. So there's, you can't hide behind this idea that your personality is an excuse for who you are. It's a feature of who you are, and you need to manage your personality.
Yeah, but how many people become managers almost on the basis that it's their turn or it's a promotion to give them a bit better salary or better terms and conditions where they may not necessarily be suited to the job of management?
I'd say far too many. So in the modern multinational organizations, there tends to be a recognition that not everybody that is deserving of promotion actually should be promoted. So they'll have a grade like individual contributor where you can continue to earn more money, you continue to have more responsibility, but it's responsibility for projects rather than responsibility for people. I think in the state sector and maybe in the old Irish industrial sector, there is definitely a heavy emphasis, a heavy bias towards seniority, heavy bias towards promotion based on longevity rather than on merit. But again, I think it is changing because, remember, people move from one job to another. They bring different mindsets. They bring different expectations. And that can influence, you know, you can have a small team that is acting differently and that can have a ripple effect into other areas.
Now, to be somewhat more sympathetic to the management and to managers, what can they do in a situation where the person doesn't respond? Or indeed, the people who complain the most are the people who actually make the least effort?
The easy answer is encourage them to be successful elsewhere, because there are some people.
Sorry, is that a euphemism for fire them out the door?
Oh, it is. Yeah, like we've all been given such encouragement.
Encourage them to be successful elsewhere. Sorry, go on.
That's a somewhat trite answer. I think if you allow most people probably want to do decent work, and if they've ended up in a situation where they're a problem, it's probably because of legacy issues and so on. And I think when somebody takes you aside and makes simple promises and delivers on those promises, and you begin to build trust in them and you begin to sense that, okay, this is somebody that maybe is different to all of the others. It's not to overstate the problem, though. You know, most people go to work. Most people listening today go to work and they do a good, honest day's work. They do work to the best of their ability. And who's missing out really is the company or the manager, because they're not allowing these people to deliver to the utmost. It's not the employees are the problem in most cases. It's the way in which they're managed, I believe.
So you put the blame at the feet of the managers more often than the employees?
I would put the responsibility a lot on managers. Yeah, because, you know, good employees are often turned into bad employees by poor management. And if you look at, even in a very good workplace, you can have two teams where, or you can have a team where the experience of the workplace is dreadful, regardless of what the company is doing to make that a pleasant workplace environment, to create a positive culture. So it's absolutely the manager who's the blockage. It's inconceivable that a team would attract 10 wasters to a great manager. You know, if you've got a team that's underperforming, the chances are that it's the manager that's the root of the problem rather than the employees themselves.
How much time should a manager spend on the office or factory floor, moving around, talking to people, being visible?
There's no stock answer, but they should spend as much time as possible. What they should do is they should spend all of their time managing. And managing is managing the work, and it's managing the workflow and so on. But it's also managing the relationships. And that starts with managing yourself. So, you know, a simple one is keeping your promises. When you talk to employees, they will say their managers tend not to keep their promises. Not the big promises. You know, everybody gets paid on time. They get their holidays when they're supposed to. They get their performance appraisals. But it's the small promises like, you know, I'll get back to you in 10 minutes. Okay, that's a promise. Like, if I hear that as a promise to get back to me in 10 minutes, then it's a promise. And it's the little things like that. Let me think about it is probably the biggest broken promise of all.
You mentioned their performance appraisals, which are normally done by superiors of people below them. How many companies actually work the other way around, where they actually ask their employees to offer appraisals of managers? And would that work because perhaps the employees would be fearful of retribution from the manager?
I think so. Can it be made work? Yes, it can. I've no idea how many do, but can it be made work? It can. But what you find, I think, is a lot of the best companies, and I don't mean best companies that have a badge of being a great workplace. I just mean the companies that are successful and that are attracting employees in larger numbers than other organizations are. what they tend to do is they tend to keep things really simple. So, you know, recruit decent people, recruit people who like people, because that's a great starting point. If you're going to manage a team, being somebody that likes people is a good starting point, because then you don't have to work on it. You know, you don't have to pretend to be interested in them. You don't have to pretend to remember the names of their kids or what their hobbies are or whatever. And I think the best companies tend to be very good at doing these simple things right. And then the managers are just able to manage it in a natural style. You know, it's not a contrived thing. It's not something they even need to work on. It's just treating people in a decent way.
Yeah, but are many managers so fearful perhaps that if they do all that sort of stuff, they'll be perceived as soft and then they'll be taken advantage of and that things won't get done in the way that they do get done if you actually force them to do it?
Well, you see, the thing is, like imagine trying to force somebody to have a good idea. You know, you can force somebody to sweep a floor, or you can force somebody to stack a shelf, or you can force somebody to drive a bus, or, you know, achieve so many deliveries in an hour. But you can't force them to write a good article or to present a good radio show, or, you know, there's so as we move more and more towards a knowledge based economy, the need to manage the brains rather than the hands becomes great. And that's really what Trust Rules is about. Like, it's a really simple approach. It's statistically based. It's based on analysis of responses from 2 million employees around the world. I actually set out originally to find out what were the differences in what causes one person to trust somebody based on culture or gender or age. And what I found is there's absolutely no difference. You know, there's tiny statistical differences. But in general, the things that cause somebody in Vietnam or somebody in India or somebody in Ireland to trust somebody are the same.
Bobby, it's a fascinating book. There's a couple of things I just want to finish out with. Should managers have a closed door or an open door policy?
Well, they should have an open door policy, but it's much more important, I'd say, to have an open mind. You know, managers never boast about having a closed door policy. So you'll always say, I have an open door.
But there are times when you need to close the door to have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, there are. But there's also, if you're saying you've got an open mind, or if you're saying you've got an open door and you're fiddling with your mobile phone, or you're glancing at the screen, or you're glancing at something that's going on behind the glass behind you, you know, you've got an open door policy, but you're actually not there.
And a final one, why is it you believe that you should start new workers on a Tuesday instead of a Monday?
Because so many workers start at 9 o'clock on a Monday, which is the busiest time of the week for everybody, and they're left sitting around in reception for half an hour. And, you know, you want to be welcomed. Like, if you call for dinner to somebody's house and you're kept outside in the hall for half an hour, it's not a good way to start off. It's the same starting a job.
Of course, if you take that analogy in Ireland, that means people who turn up for work at 9 or 10 o'clock for their 9 o'clock start.
They're fashionably late, yeah.
Bubbly, it's fascinating stuff. Trust Rules, how the world's best managers create great places to work. Thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
Great. Thanks, Matt.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.